It is Saturday, March 7, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the geek news all hour long. That's right. We'll fill you in on what's happening in your tech world. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our program, we're going to be talking about the week in geek news, and it'll be a blast. On the 7th Avenue Project, slurs, slanders, and slagging off, host Robert Pauly talks to philosopher Jeremy New about insults, why we dish them out, why we can't take them, and what they reveal about the human condition. Then Heckler, a documentary film that explores the tortured relationship between performers and those who taunt them. Robert speaks to the film's director, Michael Addis. That's the 7th Avenue Project, Sunday at noon, right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have Geek's Al Luckow. He's a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Good morning.
Miles Elam. Miles Elam's a student, programmer, political junkie. Morning, Miles.
Good morning.
We also have Ben Jaffe. Ben Jaffe is a freelance media dude. He also is a whiz with the user interface of the Macintosh computer. Morning, Ben.
Morning.
I think we're going to actually start out today, Ben, with you. What's going on in space?
Okay, so briefly, I just want to review the whole debacle about Pluto. So, because some people can't let things go, so I'll get to that in a moment. So, in 2006, the IAU, which is the International Astronomical Union, established a more clear definition of a planet. One, it has to be in orbit around a star. Two, it has to be big enough to have a gravity pull to pull itself into a roughly spherical shape. And three, it has
specifically
to...
the thing about being in orbit around the star.
Yeah,
it needs to be the primary body in orbit. So, our moon, for example, though it orbits a star, the sun. It actually, we're the primary body that's actually orbiting. So that's the difference between the two. But
and
in any case.
Yes, definitely. And it also doesn't have to, it also has to not be a star. So like binary star systems.
What's the second one?
The second one is it has to have enough of a gravity pull to pull itself into a roughly spherical shape.
Gotcha.
So it has to be big enough.
And Pluto matches those first two.
Yes, it does.
And the third?
The third is it has to clear the neighborhood of its orbit. In other words, it can't have a bunch of junk orbiting in the same approximate orbit as the sun.
Gotcha. So like the asteroid belt.
Exactly. So it has to either assimilate those objects, you know, suck them in and make them part of itself, or it has to sling them out of the way by with its gravity.
Okay.
Pluto does not pass that third test.
And that's why it was, quote, demoted to.
Yes. And people say it was. Go ahead, Miles.
What were you going to say?
Well, I was about to say it. It's not a general asteroid belt. It's the Kuiper belt, right?
Right.
Is that there? It's one of the larger Kuiper belt objects?
Or Pluto.
Or it is the largest Kuiper belt object.
Actually, I don't think it is.
Oh, something larger now?
Yeah. I mean, it with its moon, I think, is. But I think there's actually something larger. But Ben, go.
Yeah, well, it turns out that, well, they didn't really clearly define what it means to clear one's neighborhood. And so some people are making the argument that, oh, well, you know, Earth hasn't cleared its neighborhood. There's plenty of... space stuff all over the place.
That's why we have shooting stars.
Yeah, but our planet is, I believe the figure I read was over a million times the mass of all of the stuff that's around the sun in our orbit. Whereas Pluto is less than the combined mass of all of the other stuff.
Oh, okay, so that's a good rule of thumb right there.
It's a huge difference, right? So even though we haven't clearly defined it, that's a big enough difference.
Okay, so why do you bring this whole thing up, Ben? Because we chatted about this.
So Pluto isn't a planet, right? Well, it turns out Illinois Senate believes differently. They passed a resolution.
Yes, they
passed a Senate resolution that declares that as Pluto, this is a quote, resolved by the Senate of blah, 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 blah of Illinois, that as Pluto passes overhead through Illinois' night skies, that it be reestablished with full planetary status, and that March 13th, 2009 be declared Pluto Day in the state of Illinois in honor of the day its discovery was announced in 1930. So a couple questions. Why Illinois? Because Clyde Tombaugh, I'm probably getting that name a little wrong, but Clyde Tombaugh discovered the former planet known as Pluto. And he was born on a farm near the Illinois, or in Illinois. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a matter of state pride. Oh, state that's pride. Part of it, right?
Okay, here's the thing about...
There's so many problems with
this. Here's the thing that's so frustrating to me is when you look at the solar system, it's a pretty complicated beast. But you can actually segregate some stuff and go, these things are alike and these things are alike. And
well, I would say classify.
Classify, yeah. Segregate. Okay, yeah. That's a little bit of weight in our world, isn't it? classify. So you've got the inner planets, which are rocky planets, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Earth. And those are, they have atmospheres, but they're rocky.
Okay. They're rocks.
And then you've got these gas giants. You've got Saturn and Jupiter and Neptune.
And Uranus.
And these are all kind of airy, if you will. I mean, they're large, and they're not dense.
Yes.
Unlike the people in Illinois that voted for this thing. And then you've got this...
it took me a second.
Then you've got this other thing. And this other thing is the first thing we found. And
It's
amazing. Passing. Like it's a discovery that there's more stuff than planets. That's what Pluto represents. Mm-hmm. So you can think of it as actually more important than being the smallest planet. It's the first thing of a new class.
The first
of
relatively big thing.
Yeah.
Although it's not that big. It's like 1,500 kilometers.
It's like we didn't know the Kuiper Belt existed. Now we do because of Pluto.
Yeah. So it was a very historically significant discovery.
Yeah. And so from my perspective, that's more important. But also you get to say to people, we've got inner rocky planets that the sun at one point blew a lot of the atmospheric material away from them. That's why they're rocky. That's why they're mostly rock, if you will, or water and all those things that they are. And then you've got these giant gas giants, which probably the inner planets at one point looked like that. So the solar winds kind of cleared it. And then you've got some other stuff. And that other stuff thing is really kind of an interesting, like, where'd it come from? Why is it like that? Why is it not gassy out there as well? And those questions get to be answered by us by exploring it. So don't think of Pluto as, oh, no, it's not a planet and it's not loved or something. But in any case,
yeah, and
Miles, you're looking at me like we need to move on.
No. I'm perfectly
happy. You can talk about Pluto all day.
Yeah, okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. There's also...
This is the Pluto show.
I don't have to turn on the next show.
No.
Car talk doesn't have to come on.
Nope.
We can just talk all day.
Pluto.
I think I'll probably get dragged out of the room, but...
there's a larger object in that same belt than Pluto. So to call Pluto a planet would be accepting several other planets.
Actually,
into,
lots of them. Right?
Yeah, so yeah. We surely haven't discovered everything out there.
No.
I mean, that's orbiting our sun, right? So, but really, I just really want to cover briefly. First of all, we haven't mentioned who gives the state of Illinois this jurisdiction.
The people.
That's absurd. That's completely absurd.
Well, hold on. Pluto Day is only within the state of Illinois, so it does give them jurisdiction about what they're...
Pluto Day is great. Let's celebrate that object. That's a wonderful thing to celebrate.
But they say that Pluto be reestablished with full planetary status. They don't qualify within the state of Illinois.
I don't agree with the decision. I think that is politics... Really, I mean, going this miles too, far too in.
But miles, they don't, do you they go, don't qualify what, that.
But do you go at this point, well, it's a state prerogative. Who cares?
Yes, it is.
Right.
Because it's a dumb decision doesn't mean that they don't have the right to make it.
I love all the cartoons and stuff about, like, we have to send... There was, an Onion story about sending a probe to Pluto to tell him that, sorry, you got demoted.
Yeah, Pluto doesn't care.
Okay, so I heard this great story, and I can't recall who it was talking about. There's a book about Pluto. Do you know about this book? About, like,
there are many books about Pluto.
Okay, but there's this big debate. There's this big discussion in this book, and I wish I remembered what it was. But the general concept is the reason why people hate the idea of getting rid of Pluto is that it's the first planet as a child that you go, oh, I can associate with that. Mm-hmm. Because before that, you've got these Greek gods, and you've got things that you don't hit your world. And then at the end of this long list of iterations of nine things, this last one is Pluto. And, well, you know what Pluto is. Pluto's the dog, Mickey Mouse's dog, right? So that's what you can associate.
You are aware that Pluto is a Greek god,
well,
right?
Yes. But what I'm
okay.
saying...
Just making sure.
No, I know. They're all...
Just making
all,
sure. Yeah.
You know what's really
but what
interesting?
I'm saying is that the kid, that when they learn about that in class, they had a long list of things they don't know anything about. Like, maybe they've heard about about Venus being the, you know, goddess of love, right? Miles?
Yeah.
I'll go with that.
We should have named
Mars more like the god of war. Is that
more like
for you?
The goddess of lust, but all yeah.
Right. We should have named one of the planets Goofy.
And, you know, it would have been more loved. Yeah. That's the thing is they get to Pluto, and, yeah, sure enough, now they know that Pluto was actually named after a planet or a Greek god. But the point is that the kid goes, ooh, I can associate with that thing. It's the little guy. It's like me. It's Pluto. It's something I love. And then you remove that. That's why people are so angry about it. And I'm paraphrasing
that's funny
a pretty
because
long
book. I think that's a very personalized take on it. I never.
Why do you
I
think people care about this?
Because we have had this notion of there are nine planets, and now that's been changed. People don't like that change.
Well, 10 planets. What about 10 or 13 planets?
So if you're a science,
that's changed too.
If you're a science teacher for children, this is a great opportunity to say, see, science learns and adapts as we get more information. It changes. Mm-hmm. It changes all the time. This is a wonderful model of that. Because we thought for a long time we had nine planets. That was a general concept, general decision. And then we go, you know what? That needs to be rethought. And that's what science can do.
And people are making the argument that, you know, oh, we'll have to change the textbooks now. But we'd have to change the textbooks anyway to accommodate all the
thousands
new
of
planets.
Right.
Yeah, that's thousands. I mean,
well, we do have to think about the economy. I mean,
in this case,
think about all the styrofoam balls that will not be bought
that's right.
now.
Yeah.
I mean, the styrofoam ball industry is going to really take a hit because normally you need to buy styrofoam balls for every planet when you make your projects.
And what are they going to do about that? That's a serious problem.
I don't know. We need to talk about styrofoam balls. We may need to dedicate an entire show.
We might have to call somebody.
I think we have
dedicated enough show about Pluto, though. What do you think?
I was thinking styrofoam balls will be taken care of with the fact that at the bottom of the box where you have all those styrofoam balls, you have a bunch of dust. There's your Kuiper belt. But
and the biggest one of those pieces of dust, yeah, that's Pluto.
Right, but I want to come back actually to that notion of we'll have to change all the textbooks. It's not just... If you have a science textbook that isn't being changed, there is something wrong.
That's right. Mm-hmm. There's something wrong. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's move on. Oh, we're not taking calls today on GeekSpeak, by the way, because Rick is off in Japan having a wonderful time. So,
one really quick, interesting fact.
Okay.
Sorry. About Pluto.
Prove it, Ben.
This is the end. This is the end of the Pluto discussion. But Pluto was actually named by a 10-year-old. Not directly. Like, the person who named it based on a suggestion from a 10-year-old. But the 10-year-old suggestion was not based on the Disney character. It was based from the Greek god.
Yeah.
Which I think was really interesting that a 10-year-old would suggest a name that's a Greek god. That's kind
of
cool.
And as an extension of that, Pluto's moon, Charon, was actually named off of a little bit of a manipulation on the discoverer's wife's name, Charon.
Ah, but it is a Greek...
But it's also the boatman, Charon.
Okay.
So, but the discoverer always pronounced it as Charon, and he did it specifically because his wife's name was Charon.
Nice. Thank you. We're doing this thing with that Etherpad, right?
Yep.
Okay, so that means I can go over here and look at
Al. Everyone, join us. Join us on etherpad.com/geekspeak.
All right.
If you'd like.
Is that?
Al, it's that. Go for it.
All right.
The internal one that we're using is a different one. That's fine.
Okay.
So, okay. Go on.
All right. Well, we're talking about all these names. We could talk about names too, but two segues. We were talking about styrofoam planet balls and naming planets. So I think Star Trek is really the thing that a lot of people are thinking about right now.
You mean like Star Trek's all these sets and styrofoam?
Some of those doors really shook when they opened
up. That's true. That's true.
Yeah, why
Star Trek? What are we talking about?
It's the new Star Trek's coming out as a movie, and apparently it's billed as being different than all the others. And I think that even everybody can say a lot of things about all the Star Trek movies, but you know what? We all went to them. It's just one of the TV series that came out that merged technology. It was considered one of the first intelligent sci-fi works that we were able to watch and actually merged, futuristic thinking and it just appeals to everybody.
And basically, I mean, if you're a geek, you're into Star Trek, and you might be into the controversy of Star Trek versus Star Wars. But in general, you've watched Star Trek, you care about it, you know what a transporter is,
right?
Of course, everybody in our
although there is that is. Fundamental difference between Star Wars and Star Trek. The people who like Star Wars vilify its creator. The people who love Star Trek deify their creator.
That's a good point. Gene Roddenberry is well loved.
Well, it's a phenomenon, and I think we all know it's there. And a lot of times, I was looking up. I think, well, what is it exactly about Star Trek that is so appealing? And I found a couple of interesting things on the web. One guy, his name is David Gerald, and he is the guy. He's one of the writers for the original Star Trek. He wrote the Tribbles episode, which ended up being one of the
great
most
the Trouble with Tribbles.
Yeah, one of the most popular ones.
And see, Ben, I am a Trekkie, a Trekker, whatever.
The Tribble with Tribbles.
You can't even be in this room without knowing that.
But what was the name of the Deep Space Nine episode that referred to that and reused old clips? Miles.
Yeah, but see, that's Deep Space Nine. Johnny come lately.
To boldly sit where no one has sat before.
I'm sitting between these two guys. I know what that feels like. Anyway, this guy, this writer, he said, the context of Star Trek is that there's a world where everybody is respected and everybody has a place in this world, and people are all big enough to handle their own problems. And so they focus on problems of a much larger scale and challenges of a much larger enterprise. And the other thing that was kind of interesting here is he said they would come up against new people and new planets that would challenge their definition of themselves. It would make them ask the question, what does it mean to be human? What are we all here for? And that was part of the appeal of the show.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was also Roddenberry's idea, I think, in a large part of the first series, was to show a future society where people are working together. Yeah. And that idea, I mean, even in Next Generation, you had a navigator who was blind. It's like mm-hmm. everybody's going to, you know.
Right.
It's a magic world in some sense.
And I think anybody who, you know, basically using the power of your mind and the individual person you are, making you successful. I think that's why everybody, you know, sees this appeal. And with this new movie coming out, I guess it's set with earlier.
It's actually
a prequel. It's kind of like Star Wars Episode One, but probably not nearly as bad.
Yeah.
No offense to anyone who took offense.
Well,
but the idea behind this first movie, it's the Academy with the characters from the first movie. From the first series, from the original series, going through the Academy and their life in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, starting before Kirk had a spaceship.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, I'm not going to do any spoilers.
Well, you know what?
I've heard many.
You heard a lot. We don't need to get really into that. But what the thing is, it's interesting about Star Trek is that it's so modified how we think about the world. I mean, for example, I mentioned LaForge not having sight and being a navigator and what a clever mm-hmm. idea and everything. And then, you know, a news story from last week. Well, at first he was a navigator, and then he became an engineer.
Oh, that's right.
Engineer.
He was.
Yeah, he was a navigator for a little while. That was kind of the point.
Well, he was ops officer. No, you're right. He was navigator. Then Wesley Crusher took over.
Right, and then basically the character, what's his name? What's the actor's name?
Wheaton?
No. LaForge. Anyway, he was well-liked enough.
LeVar Burton.
LeVar Burton, yeah. Thank you. He was well-liked enough that he became a more central role. In any case, so this week's, you know, one of the news stories from this week, Al, that you grabbed was a man who had lost his sight 30 years ago can now see after a bionic implant, and his retina was damaged with a disease that affects retinas, lots of them actually, and they've modified a bionic implant, and now he can actually follow a white line on a pavement while driving. I'm assuming he's not driving, and then he can sort socks by color. I think just by shade to some degree, but in general, he's gotten enough sight now where he can. He can rely on his eyes for input to his body again, and he couldn't for 30 years. Pretty amazing, and of course, that's a very futuristic thing that we live in a society now that's like that.
Well, a lot of, Star Trek, a lot of the things, I wonder how many scientists out there were actually inspired by watching Star Trek, seeing these things, wow, could we talk to a computer and have the computer do what we tell it to do? I mean, I had a friend that was really into sound, and he was explaining to me how the sound in Star Trek, even, for a TV show, they would change the sound when you're in one room as opposed to another room. You hear different engine noises and things like that. I mean, that's cool stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll bring up little Star Trek bits and pieces as we go through the day.
Well,
besides the sound of Star Trek, there's also another scent that's being used.
Yes. With the new movie, there's all the extra little things that come out with the movie and merchandising. And one thing that I found kind of neat is the Star Trek perfume.
Oh, give me a break.
It's a trio of scents from the Final Frontier. And they have three scents. One's called Tiberius, one's called Red Shirt, and one's called Ponfar.
So what, no Klingon musk? I mean, come on. So,
nobody wants to smell Klingon musk.
I don't want to smell like death.
No one wants to smell like Redshirt, yeah.
Well, they say Tiberius cologne is for men, and it's difficult to define and impossible to refuse, which is also a pretty good description of Captain Kirk.
Tiberius.
What's funny is Redshirt, the company that's making this perfume, and it's real. I mean, this is not a joke. It's called Genki. And Genki's Redshirt cologne, whose tagline, because tomorrow may never
come. The perfume company is Genki?
Genki, yeah.
That does not sound like a good
name.
It
does not sound weird.
It's spelled differently.
With an E. It's spelled G. It's
G-E-N-K-I-S.
Don't all fragrance companies have to be French? Isn't that the rule?
But the Redshirt celebrates the sacrifices of those often nameless crew of the USS Enterprise. And as we all know, what happens to the Redshirt guys.
What was the tagline again?
The tagline is because tomorrow may never come.
So what does the Ponfar scent do? Drive you insane till someone strokes your fingers?
Well, it's Ponfar.
You are a Trekkie. Wow.
He knows.
Yeah.
Oh, Miles, man. If he's watched it, he memorized it.
It's the Vulcan mating ritual. Mm-hmm. So this one, it says, the most risque titled of the new Star Trek fragrances is Ponfar.
The most risque titled.
Wait, the Vulcan mating ritual? It's, no, it's not.
No.
It's not risque.
It's male Vulcans when they hit puberty.
Well,
well,
you know
the mating ritual follows.
You want to ask Miles a Trek question? Yeah. You want to try to stump Miles? Go ahead and email us right now.
We're
geeks at geeks.
Except I know nothing about Voyager or Enterprise.
That's fine. First edition's fine. But you know about Next Generation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
Next Generation.
I would love to get some quizzes here through email, just to get some feedback. We normally have people that can call in stuff. We can't take calls today, but we'll take your email. Just go to GeekSpeak and fill out the contact form, or if you just want to email us, it's geeks@geekspeak.org.
Now, there is also a Star Trek Klingon keyboard, which has been released. Mm. And all of these news items have been have been released all with the new Star Trek trailer, the full theatrical trailer, which just came out. And man, I gotta say, that's, you know, even if the movie's just awful, which I sure hope it's not, that trailer is very, very well done. So,
yeah.
And
yeah.
It in HD. After watching it, I kind of wanted to go frame by frame because there's this scene that looks like the Enterprise is exploding. And so I went frame by frame and it's GeekSpeak. I'm safe saying this. The registry number is not the same of the Enterprise. So it's deceiving.
Ah, good, good. Yes. Thank you. Miles, let's go to the real world for a second. Or we can connect it to Star Trek.
Pluto's the real world.
That's true. No, it's not. It's another
not a
thing.
World. It's a floating body. Yeah.
Recently, I did a story. Recently, I did a story on a wall wart that was a computer.
Right.
And I thought that was so amazing.
Supply-like device that was actually a full computer. USB ports, the whole
thing. Right. Okay. And when I mentioned this, I went to hang out with Sean, former geek, former person on GeekSpeak. And he was talking about, like, oh, well, we have some stuff going on at NVIDIA that is kind of like that, Tegra chip. And I kind of like, oh, really? Huh, okay. Because
what's it called, Tegra chip?
Tegra, yeah. Because a lot of people will tell you, like, oh, here's this other thing or something. So I went to go take a look at it. And, oh, my God. This is something where this is a game changer. And I don't want to make this an ad for NVIDIA. I actually think this is going to be the shape of things to come. This is how things
what
are
is
going
it? It's
be.
A chip. What are you talking about?
Imagine you have a cell phone.
I have a cell phone.
That cell phone is able to play HD video for 10 hours.
Play HD video? Like 720?
Or 1080. Yeah.
That's what that chip can do?
Now, combine that with, let's say you were able to plug your phone into your TV and play an HD movie.
Okay. I like that. So what you're saying, I mean, I've got a video out on my iPhone, for example, and I can play movies on TV, but it's not HD.
It's DVD
from
quality,
from the same form factor, you could do that.
Yes.
Yeah, that is the future. Well, that ties back into Star Trek. You want to get away from Star Trek, but you can't because they had tablets that could do the kind of thing.
Right, but it has that. It has, like, you know, going out to a TV, it has 3D, which doesn't really surprise me coming from NVIDIA, that they'd be able to do 3D modeling and have OpenGL stuff on there. It also has a camera up to a 12 megapixel CCD range.
Wait, on the chip? Or
support for it, yeah. Oh,
I see. In the package that they offer for phones. Okay, let me just ask you. Is this hardware going to be used in Android? Is somebody going to make an Android
phone? People have been
phone?
Talking about it, yeah. Yeah. Trying to port the Android OS.
Android's
to it.
The OS that Google's made that's an open source OS for.
Because it is an ARM chip, an ARM 11. But at the same time, something that really gets me is that all of this with like Wi-Fi and.
The whole deal, yeah.
Is between 2.5 to 4 watts. That's the envelope.
Wow. So you're talking about long playing.
Yes.
Hours of play.
Right. And
that's exciting.
And the thing is, this really does, it's a game changer in that we don't need netbooks, per se. Like a lot of times we don't need laptops. If you're playing games, you're playing high-end games, things like that, yes, absolutely. But with this, especially when it has something called USB on the go, I had never heard of that beforehand. And I actually look at tech stuff
a lot.
You
know a little bit about technology, yeah.
USB on the go, normally you have a USB device is either a master or a slave, meaning that it's either a computer that USB devices plug into or it's the USB device that plugs into.
Right. Either it's a hard drive or a computer that controls hard drives or it's a keyboard or the computer that uses a keyboard. Right.
This chip is using something called USB on the go, which is when the phone connects up to a computer, it's a slave device. In other words, a storage device you can go and put stuff.
It becomes like a hard drive.
Right. Mm-hmm. But if you plug in, for example, a keyboard to it, the keyboard becomes the slave device, and it becomes a host device.
So you're talking about a small handheld device we can put in, plug in a keyboard and a mouse, and that's it. You're done. You've got a full computer right there.
Right, and that's the thought, actually, is what if you have something like this that's Bluetooth, or you plug into a USB hub, you plug it into this little docking station, and you have your keyboard, and you plug into a monitor. And
oh, right. It's got 1080p, it's got a full-size monitor.
But you still need a 1080p monitor.
But that's right, the idea is you come home or you come to any station, actually, that doesn't even have a computer. You plug in, you dock in, whatever.
You do your
and
work.
You start using it, and then you get up and leave, and you're taking your computer
and
with you.
And then when you're
times.
On the bus, you can still do everything you need to on using the touchpad.
Right.
Yeah. Miles' future is coming along very nicely. Thank you for talking about Star Trek.
Yeah, this is very excited. It's not available yet. You have to wait until like the end of the year.
But it's soon. I mean, within the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's... Like I said, it's a game changer. Everyone's going to be playing catch up, trying to do the same thing.
NVIDIA
phenomenal.
Tegra. What is it called again? Integra or Tegra?
Tegra.
Tegra.
T-E-G-R-A.
You're listening to Geek Speak on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. My name's Lyle Troxell. We have Miles Elam, Al Luckow, and Ben Jaffe. We are covering the Weekend Geek News. We'll also take some questions and stuff through email today only. You can email us by going to our website, geekspeak.org, and clicking Contact Us. Or if you like typing in addresses, anyway, go ahead and just email us at geeks@geekspeak.org.
We'll also take questions via the Etherpad chat room, which is actually quite active. We're still talking about Star Trek.
Well, are there questions on there for us?
No, but if you post them.
Okay. That's Etherpad, etherpad.com/geekspeak. Let's go on to the next news item, shall we? Who's up? I think Ben.
Yeah, the Kepler mission, NASA's Kepler mission was launched last night. Very cool to watch. I didn't watch it, but I watched many other people watch it via Twitter. I'm getting my news third hand, but I don't know. These are
okay. So what's Kepler?
That's great.
Who is Kepler?
Kepler.
Oh. Or what's the Kepler mission for?
I can't tell you who Kepler is. I couldn't give you a good definition.
Okay.
I could put Miles on the spot.
No, let's do this.
Okay.
What's the mission for?
The Kepler mission is it's a space-borne telescope that they launched yesterday. And the idea behind it is it's designed to search the nearby region of our galaxy. And it's searching for planets that are orbiting within a certain distance to stars. It's called the habitable zone. And it's looking for Earth-sized planets. And so, in other words, it's looking for planets that could conceivably have liquid water on it, and liquid or water in general. And of course, water is one of the most important things for life as we know it. So that's what it's looking for, and it's kind of interesting the way it works. What it does is it points. It's very good at detecting changes in light levels, and so it points the telescope at all of these different stars I think once a day, I think it is, for a couple of years, 3.5 years. And the idea is that it's looking for changes in the light output of these stars, not for anything going in front of the going on inside of the stars, but for planets that are orbiting in front of the stars and temporarily blocking the light levels. And by taking that data, and you can kind of extrapolate what kind of planets are around.
The way to do that now, the detection is work. One way to do the detection is that the star, as it planet circles around it, will actually shift away and towards us, and because of that, you can see a Doppler shift on the star.
With the star wheel?
Yeah, just from the planet moving the star.
Really?
Yeah. Which I think is part of this mission. It's pretty amazing that you can get that detailed on spectral analysis.
Are you sure?
It's planetary, that's really... or the stellar wobble.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's how you detect the wobbles by that.
Well, what if you have planets that are on opposite sides of the star?
Yeah, if it was in perfectly in sync, you wouldn't see the wobble, of course, but...
you'd have to observe it for a long time.
Doesn't happen in our solar system.
That's very cool, though.
Because normally bodies actually clear their orbital path. Anyway... that are large.
I'm not going to take the bait.
So that launched yesterday. That's very cool.
That launched yesterday. All right, great. And also, this telescope is capable of detecting light differences so small that if you were to turn on and off your porch light, it could detect it from orbit.
What? Seriously?
That's how detailed it is in particularly in detecting differences in light levels.
I heard they said that you could, it would be like a flea walking across your headlight. It could be detected from miles away.
It's just phenomenal.
It's sensitive.
Yeah.
Kepler's kind of gave, by the way, Kepler is a, 1500s to 1600s scientist, German mathematician, astronomer, astrologer. that's too bad. And his work basically fed into Isaac Newton, which people normally know about and associate Isaac Newton with gravity. So anyway, Kepler's laws of motion were the first kind of codifying of how the bodies in the solar system work. And that's who Kepler is. I just did a Wikipedia entry, by the way. And of course, I knew some of that, but I didn't know all that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I wouldn't have known he was an astrologer.
Well, everybody was an astrologer at that point. That's why you looked at the stars. In fact, it was less clear what an astrologer versus an astronomer was.
True.
We now call people that look at the stars astronomers, and people that make things up astrologers. So, okay, let's go.
Well stated.
I'm glad we're not taking calls today. let's go on to, I think Miles. I think it's your turn.
I just went live.
I know.
The White House has changed some direction fairly quietly. In the past, the White House has put in notices onto YouTube, which was already a pretty good step. The communication lines were stepping up. It wasn't just a radio address. It's now, full video, keeping track of who is making decisions, how they're making that decision, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
However, there was an issue with the fact that they're being hosted by YouTube. There's a conceptual issue of you, to find out information about what's going on with the executive branch, have to go to a private company, which may be gathering information you don't want to know. Well, it is I don't believe per se that YouTube was doing anything nefarious. However, it is a concern.
Right, because you're saying we want to talk to you, the people, because we're your representative, so go to this company.
Right.
That's the basic thing. It's like,
right. Go to this company that is not accountable to
right now. Even though they're YouTube's kind of goal and stuff in some sense is to give away, to let people promote themselves and not be associated with the actual work and modifying the work, they still do that. So it's not in exchange for ad revenue. So what are they doing now? Are they changing away from that?
So what the White House has done is they are now hosting it themselves off of whitehouse.gov.
Great.
So they now have a video player off of that. I thought it was an interesting change.
Yeah.
I don't believe that they had to do it, but at the same time, with regard to perceptions, with regard to just the ethics of it, I think it's a good move.
Okay. Speaking of politics to some degree, what happened to Colorado? What did Colorado recently do?
Colorado.
I mean, we're covering a whole bunch of stories about states doing stuff. But
great, yeah. Rocky Mountain state. They decided that for the Office of Technology and their work skills website specifically, that you were not to use Firefox or basically any other browser besides IE. And
actually a pretty common thing for companies to kind of test with one suite and say, this is what you need to use.
Right. But the idea behind it was that the Firefox browser and other browsers pose a security risk. Non-Internet Explorer browsers pose a security risk, which was really interesting to a lot of people who
like the idea of web development, facts.
Who know about security risks.
That's to say that the IE security target is smaller.
Right. So how did they stand on that? I mean, how could they stand there and say that? What was their
Well, the, I don't know if they were standing or if they were sitting while they were typing up the website. Who knows? But since then, that site has gone down.
Really?
It looks like there are too many people that have... I don't know if it was taken down by someone cracking the system. I think it's more along the lines of there are too many people going there. What? Are you kidding? What?
All right. Well, thanks for that. It was a short story.
Not saying the Firefox, you're going to be absolutely safe, but to say that Internet Explorer 6 is safer than basically any other browser out there is ridiculous.
IE6? Oh, I thought you were talking about IE.
No, they were saying IE browsers. So IE6 to them is acceptable.
Oh,
but anything else is not. And the idea that IE6 is safe is questionable.
Well, ridiculous. No browser
laughable.
Is safe. But
it is the least safe browser in common use.
That's a better way to say it. I want to let you know that actually I'm on Twitter. I'm following Data. Of course, his real name is not Data. And I'm blanking on his name.
Brent Spiner.
Brent Spiner.
And Data being the character from Star Trek.
Thank you very much. The connected Star Trek name. And one of the things that that happens whenever I talk about Twitter and things, he by the way, talks about his performance career and stuff. He's a theater, an actor.
He's actually an actor, not a robot?
That's right. And he does.
Oh, really?
He's
wow.
not. I mean, he's.
He really looks like a robot
anyway,
on
wait,
the show.
Android,
yeah.
And you can follow him and find out what he's doing, and it's kind of neat, and he's a pretty smart and witty guy.
He's
so that's
very
why I
smart.
Follow. But one thing that kind of gets me about mentioning Twitter is it sounds so stupid. There are so many technology names out there. You're like, you start using it, you're like, yeah, I'm a Twitter. And then, you know, I like blogs. Now, I know the history of the blog. Like, it's a web log. That's why a blog got created. Fine, we have that in our vernacular. That's what we're going to use. I'll accept it. I'll stomach it, though I feel like I die a little bit inside every time. But there's a lot of names out there.
I don't remember you saying this in 2000, in 2001.
I was explaining to people. What do you,
well,
I'll listen to the episode.
We determined that explaining Twitter never works.
No, we're not going to explain Twitter.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Exactly.
Okay.
No matter how good of an idea it seems like at the time, you can't explain Twitter and not have the other person laugh at you.
But there are a lot of crazy names out there that we start using on GeekSpeak. And Al, you found a story about like kind of figuring out what those names come from.
Yeah. I mean, I've been involved in a lot of naming of products myself, and I know how crazy things can get. But I saw a few little items that people might like to hear.
Yeah.
For example, TiVo. What's that name?
Everybody
knows what TiVo is. You know how to TiVo something is a verb, it's a noun. But
that's true. It's actually entered into the idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Originally, they were going to call it Bongo or Lasso.
And yeah, you couldn't bongo something.
Yeah, I had to put my bongo on and
cue the
drums. You could lasso something, though.
You could lasso something. I guess there was around 800 possible names that they had tried before they ended up on TiVo. And the way the name was constructed is they took the engineering acronym input-output, I-O, and they just put TV with it.
Oh, that's where it comes from?
So
okay,
yeah,
now
so
I like that name
TiVo.
A lot.
So it actually is kind of a cool name. A lot of these things, you know, they really come from a cool place. Another one, Hulu.
You know, I've always the abbreviation of TV for television has always kind of upset me. But you're talking about is it's a tele input vision output is what TiVo is.
Yep,
that's cool.
TiVo.
All right, what's the next one you had?
Hulu.
Hulu. I use Hulu all the time.
There's a lot of meanings to the word Hulu. The way they did it is a Mandarin Chinese definition of interactive recording and a hollowed-out gourd used to hold precious things.
Of course. Well, that's kind of cool.
But it also means, to a native Hawaiian, it means hair. And to somebody who speaks Swahili, it means cease. And
cease?
Yep.
And as
to,
in?
Stop.
To stop doing something.
And to an Indonesian, it means but.
So it's not a perfectly universal.
It's not perfect. Well, it's
word.
Not real popular in
and
Indonesia.
Hulu, HULU.com. You can watch any television up there that you want,
yeah.
And even movies are up there,
right.
And all of it's commercial driven.
Another one that I thought was kind of neat: Bluetooth. You know, we've been using this word Bluetooth forever, and it's really. I thought, you know, when I first heard that name, I thought, wow, domain names are really getting that hard to. You know, people are just like combining random words to do anything, and it's this big thing, and it's Bluetooth. But actually, it does have some origin. It's somewhat regal.
In the 10th century, Danish king Harald Blåtand was able to unite warring factions in Norway, Sweden, and Denmark under one banner. Similarly, the developers of the Bluetooth signal wanted to unite many different forms of technology, cars, computers, and mobile phones in one communications network. So when they were coming up with a name, they went to the English translation of the Danish king's last name, Bluetooth.
No way.
Yeah, that's how it came. I mean, I can't believe that Bluetooth means something, because it just, this whole time I thought it was just random two words.
You know what I always thought is, around the same time as Bluetooth was being defined, blue LEDs got a lot cheaper. I thought, oh, well, that makes sense. They're gonna capitalize on this idea of a blue flashy thing that's on things, because blue LEDs are cheaper. And that's what I was associated with.
I think everybody has their own thought in their head of how Bluetooth came about. Yeah. I mean, everybody thinks about
it. So it's actually Danish king.
It has some relevance. Cool. Another one, BlackBerry. The phone that everybody uses. Originally, they were going to...
The thumb breaker.
Uh-huh. They were going to call it the Leapfrog phone. I think that's like a kid's thing now, isn't it?
Yeah,
Leapfrog. But they were going to do that because the phone was leaps and bounds over everything else on the market. And one of the other names they were considering was Strawberry, because the tiny keys resembled the seeds on a strawberry.
Oh,
which
yeah.
would be weird. And somebody just said BlackBerry, and they just kept kicking it around. It was one of those things that people just kept calling it BlackBerry, and it stuck. It wasn't really
internally. It should be a strawberry, because it kind of looks like a strawberry, but it's black, so let's call it a BlackBerry.
I guess that's what they did.
You know, I really like BlackBerry. As berries go, I think BlackBerry's I think that's my favorite. What's your favorite berry?
Very common around here.
Oh, that's strawberry. Okay. If you put me on the spot, I'll say strawberry probably.
Ben Jaffe.
Good strawberries.
Good strawberries. Al Luckow?
I think BlackBerries. I'm into
BlackBerries. Okay. Yeah. Miles Elam?
What type of berry?
Favorite berry, yeah.
Probably blueberry at this point.
Really?
Yeah.
You like those? Do you like them in pie?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like them in pie. I think it's also
hearing about the health benefits, the antioxidant of it. I've actually started to really get into them.
Well, there's a whole list of different things that are listed, like Wikipedia and Nintendo Wii, Prius, mm-hmm. and all that you can find from our website, geekspeak.org. Let's move on to other things. Ben, it's your turn.
Oh, okay. I just had one more quick comment about that story.
It's very cool. Mm-hmm.
Is another reason why we have all these weird names now as opposed to 5 years ago is because domain names are really scarce. And so instead of paying someone $100,000 to get their domain name, you know, like applegotme.com, I have no idea how much they paid for that, but it must have been huge. Instead, you can just make something up that's kind of catchy, like Hulu or TiVo.
Or Flickr is a good example.
And if it catches on, then you've got a domain name relatively cheap.
Flickr was the first one where I went, oh yeah, that's very clever. Because Flickr is the word Flickr, which kind of represents taking photographs, which is perfect for them. And they just drop the E. So it's still, you can still read it as Flickr, but you definitely type it. I think they actually own Flickr with the E now, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, they do. I don't think they did at first.
Probably. No, they didn't at first. It was a small startup before Yahoo bought them and didn't do anything with them for a long time until they started getting stale and irrelevant.
Aww.
In any case, I'm a paying customer. So anyway, Ben, story.
Just a brief story, which is that for ages now, you know, we've had Internet Explorer and all of these other applications bundled with Windows, and we haven't really been able to remove them, you know, at least not without bending over backwards. So Microsoft's confirmed that finally in Windows 7, there will be a way to remove Internet Explorer 8, as well as several other applications like Windows DVD Maker and Windows Media Player and Media Center and you know, Windows Search, et cetera, Fax and Scan. And all of these things, in my opinion, should have been able to be removed this whole time. And there are a lot of lawsuits going on or that have been going on about this in the past and also presently. So anyway, that's some good news. Now, the catch is that the files that are associated with the applications are not actually deleted from the hard drive. They're just basically made, well, they're uninstalled, but they're not actually deleted. So you still have them maybe taking up some space on your hard drive, but at least you don't have them installed and runnable and sometimes running. So,
okay, cool. So it cleans it up. It cleans up the run process.
Yeah, and especially if on a Windows machine, I don't want Internet Explorer on my machine, period, because in my opinion, it's awful browser.
But wait, you need it to do Windows updates.
Well,
I don't think you should let go of Windows Internet Explorer. You should just never run it, because you do need it for Windows updates. And even if you use the Firefox run as IE, you still need Internet Explorer's core features.
That's true. But, I mean, in the off chance that I were to get an exploit which would run Internet Explorer to install...
I see what you're saying.
I don't know. You know, like it's easier to run Internet Explorer than to run other random malicious code, right? And if you can run Internet Explorer and navigate it to a website, then that website could use loopholes.
It's a dangerous vector. So
very dangerous.
Speaking of dangerous vectors...
How would something open up Internet Explorer... You know, remotely, if you don't have it as your default browser,
How about your 7-year-old son?
Well, also, what if you don't change your default?
If there's no icon, how does he do that?
He goes to Start menu. Oh yeah, remove it from the shortcuts.
Yeah,
remove from all your startup shortcuts. That's a good idea. So you can
it doesn't run
on a Windows machine. The Start menu and all those things, you can actually modify everything inside there. And if you click on Start and go to something that you don't want to show up, and you right-click and say delete, you just deleted the shortcut, and the actual application is there. You can go to Program Files and find it.
Same thing with OS X and the dock. If you if you drag something out of the dock or the left sidebar of the Finder windows, you can put those things back just by dragging them back. Yeah, they're shortcuts. They're aliases.
Isn't the Start menu on the Windows machine how you turn it off?
Yes, Start, turn off.
Yeah, that's a good UI designer joke.
That's low.
Just click on Start to turn it off.
Speaking of bad vectors, we've been covering this PDF story, and it's just getting worse and worse. I mean, the exploits for the PDF bug are really bad. And is there a patch yet? Can I say people
getting worse or just getting more common?
More common,
Because the actual exploit, it doesn't actually... the exploit, once you have an exploit, it's carte blanche.
Right. There's a lot of ways to access
it. The payload can do is... can be great or small. It doesn't.
I guess what I'm asking is, we could talk about the fear factor of Adobe Acrobat Reader as much as we want, but do we have a solution for anybody?
Well, there was that homebrewed patch. Adobe said they were going to release it by I can't remember the exact date. I think it was
March
11th. Yeah, March 11th.
Okay, so look this week. If you see an update for Adobe, do it. I mean, at this point, you've got to do it.
Because the exploit is getting worse, where now you don't actually have to open the malicious file to get it. You can actually, if you have a certain exploit, there are methods where if you just hover over the file, then it will execute it and create a thumbnail. And by creating that thumbnail, it'll run the malicious code. Similarly, if you navigate to a folder that has the file inside of it, then, in thumbnail view, then it'll run that.
All right. Speaking of running things and crazy people doing crazy things.
I love your segues. They're great.
They're really bad, I think. Especially since I'm about to hand this off to Alan. It's not Al's story.
People doing crazy things.
Well, let's deal with the robot love thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, somebody had mentioned to me.
Oh, good. It's Al's story.
You know, you don't talk about robots enough.
No. No one does, in fact.
And I thought, we haven't really had any good robot stories. So I kind of scoured the web to see if I could find something. And I did. So for those of you out there who are interested in robots, there was a particular incident. It happened in Kyoto of March. Staff researchers at Toshiba's Ekimu Robot Research Institute were thrilled 10 months ago when they successfully programmed Kenji, a third-generation humanoid robot, to convincingly emulate certain human emotions. Kenji first demonstrated love by bonding with a stuffed doll in its enclosure, which he would embrace for hours at a time. And then he would make simple but insistent inquiries about the doll if it were out of sight. The trouble all started when a young female intern began to spend several hours with Kenji.
Okay, wait a second. So they had a doll, and they told Kenji this doll's important to you.
Yes. Programmatically. He fell in love with the doll. Well,
it's a good term.
The entity of Kenji.
Kenji, would take the doll and look at it and play with it.
I love this doll.
Love this doll. Want to do a lot of affection
with it. Don't take the doll away.
And then people would take the doll and hide it, and Kenji would ask about it. Mm-hmm. Where is it? What's going on? Yeah. So, pseudo-representation of love.
Kind of like love, yeah.
Okay.
And then the same thing happened to a tech intern. One day, she tried to leave the room, and Kenji refused to let her out of the lab enclosure and used his bulky mechanical body to block her exit and hug her repeatedly. The intern was only able to escape after she had frantically phoned two senior staff members to come and temporarily deactivate Kenji.
So Kenji wouldn't let her leave the room?
No.
So okay, that's horrific.
Classic codependent.
But, however, Dr. Takahashi admits they will more than likely have to decommission Kenji, but he's optimistic about one day succeeding where Kenji failed.
Now, this is a biped robot. This is a humanoid-type robot, and it wanted to hold on to somebody.
Yeah. I mean, their idea is...
Can anybody say...
their idea is this is only a minor setback.
Yeah.
I have full faith that they will one day live side by side with robots.
I have Warner Brothers cartoons running through my head. I want to love him and pet him and squeeze him, and I will name him George.
Yeah.
Will Smith has to stay around. Otherwise, when the robots take over, we won't have anyone to save us.
So that's our robot story. Robots gone haywire.
What would Brent Spiner think?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, he got taken over by oh, no, that was an alien. Excuse me.
Yeah.
All right, Ben, you're up next. I can cue on one that I'm interested in, or you can just go for it.
Cue me, and I may or may not have it.
All right, what's up with IE8?
Oh, wait, IE8.
Okay, Microsoft confirms IE8 kill switch for Windows 7.
Oh, I already covered that.
You did?
Yeah, kill switch being the uninstall.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the headline on that.
To the show.
I didn't understand what you meant. I thought you meant that
was
running IE8 in Windows 7. If you can do malicious code, that
don't you
the
know
browser,
now Steve Jobs has a kill switch in his office. He can kill anything, just iPhone applications.
Never mind. Wow. How about Diebold? What's up with the?
Oh yeah. So sure enough, we were talking
Premier Election Systems. Thank you very much.
They changed their name.
What you?
They changed it a while ago.
It's a very good idea, I think, in their circumstances.
And it was Diebold, not Diebold.
Oh,
that's better.
Although Diebold was so much better.
Diebold.
Well, sure enough, as we all suspected, some of this software, the audit logs don't record the deletion of ballots, don't always record correct dates, and can be deleted by the operator accidentally or intentionally. So that's kind of sketchy. I mean, these are supposed to be voting machines that are secure.
It's always sketchy, no matter what the company's name is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, some people were being optimistic. Well, they were wrong. And we were right.
Thank you, Ben. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Auto, streaming live and podcasting at kosp.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence. And this is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. We have Miles Elam. We have Ben Jaffe. We have Al Luckow. We have 1 minute left. Al, go.
Why are we wasting our time thinking about the economy and global warming when we could be blowing bacon-flavored bubbles? Bubble Buddy, the original scented bubble-blowing dog toy for dogs, blows bacon-flavored bubbles.
Right.
Seriously?
It's true. It's a real thing.
So like a bubble machine, but the bubbles actually taste
bubbles
like bacon.
Taste and smell like bacon.
Delicious. That's a great dog toy. Thank you.
I can't wait.
Ben, can you beat that? Crazy tech stuff this week? Nothing.
I can't.
Miles?
Yeah, solar panels dropped to $1 per watt.
Ooh, that's not crazy. That's wonderful.
That's crazy.
No,
wonderful.
Actually, it's
crazy
a problem
wonderful is
because those ones that go down $1 a watt require materials that are not abundant enough in the Earth's crust.
Oh.
I mean, they're not abundant enough. So,
wait, how could it be cheap if it's rare?
Because right now we're not using them.
Oh, so it's this new material totally rare. And oh my gosh, we can make solar.
It's not a new material, but it's a new material for solar panels.
Does it taste like bacon?
You can learn this more at geekspeak.org.
Yes, I will post that story.
And for GeekSpeak and KOSP, I'm Lyle Troxell.